ongoing Turkish attacks, because we need to understand something that's very important, is that Turkey, from 2014, by supporting ISIS into the killing of 14,000 Kurdish people at the hands of ISIS, backed by Turkey, was very important. Since then, in 2018, Turkey occupied Afrin, a region in northern East Syria that was under the Kurdish self-rule, and ethnically cleansed thousands of people, sold Kurdish women to slavery. And there are many, many human rights reports that show this at this moment. So 2018. 2019, Turkey again came to the UN meeting, and in front of all the UN, the world leaders, showed a detailed map as to how Turkey plans to colonize and occupy the northern East Syria. So it's trying to attack Kurds. And 2023, right before Israel's genocide started in Gaza, Turkey destroyed 40% to 50% of infrastructure in northern East Syria. And these, you know, they hardly make it to the media, but these are the realities, that Turkey is a major threat to Kurds and to democratic experiment that Kurds have been implementing in the region starting in 2014.
So let's talk about how this will all play out with the presidential transition here. Right. The U.S. is backing one Syrian Kurdish group that Turkey is opposed to, but at the same time, Turkey and the U.S. are allies, right?
Yes.
Both in NATO.
Yes.
And also, how worried are Kurds in Syria about President Trump returning to power? In 2019, he greenlit a Turkish invasion into northern Syria.
Right, right. I mean, as you know, these are fascist governments that are basically in coordination since the Cold War. Turkey has been one of major allies of the United States in the region, starting with the Cold War. I mean, using military training, sales of war equipment, the planes, the F-16s that kill Kurds in northern East Syria are sold by the U.S., and not only are sold by the U.S., but the U.S. actually gives a lot of military funding, humanitarian funding that are used in the purchase of these weaponry. So behind, you know, if you scratch the surface a little bit, the only purpose of those U.S. troops in the region were to prevent the further growth of ISIS. Because even prior to the U.S. entering the region, it was the Kurdish forces who have been, because of their own movement success of 40 years of practicing of self-governing, self-defense, women's self-defense forces. So these were all in place before the U.S. entered the region. But the current presence of the U.S. troops is to prevent Turkey from entering, annihilating, crushing, killing Kurds in tens of thousands. What we're seeing in Gaza today can happen in Rojava if we don't enter. And it happened previously to Kurdish populations in my hometown of Dersim, 1938, in Iraq. So the Kurdish populations, at the hands of these governments who are in cooperation with the U.S., who use U.S. funding, U.S. military equipment, and then somehow appearing on the surface as if there is some contradiction here between the U.S. and Turkey. At the moment, as you said in the beginning, Turkey, Israel, and the U.S. collectively are trying to carve out this land, and Kurds are under threat. And also, I have to say, one important thing is, even during Assad regime, Turkey was preventing the Kurds from sitting at the negotiating table to determine the future of a democratic Syria. And Turkey is doing that right now. While HDS have been giving some messages that Kurds could be included in this process, that is after that the Turkish foreign minister made several visits, signaled that, hey, we've been supporting HDS for the past 11 years. And so Turkey is trying very hard to prevent Kurds from sitting at the negotiating table. And that's a very big loss for the region in general.
And, of course, we'll continue to cover this. Özlem Gunnar, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Associate Professor at Department of Sociology and Anthropology at College of Staten Island, and also at the CUNY Graduate Center here in Manhattan. Happy birthday to Narmeen Maria. Tune in tomorrow to our tribute to the blacklisted lyricist Yip Harbor, the man who put the rainbow in The Wizard of Oz, his song sung by millions around the world. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
members or Carnegie Mellon University. Email questions or comments to pa@wrct.org.
You're tuning into WRCT Pittsburgh, Forbes Avenue. I'm Kate Smiggy, and I'm joined by Richard Gordon and Laura Schock. And we're right here at the Phipps Botanical Gardens, and we're going to be talking about the Holiday Magic Light Show, some of the general plant information at Phipps, some of the creativity that goes into installing work, and the importance of botanical gardens in the modern age.
Laura, why don't you tell us a little bit about Phipps? I've only lived here 6 years. This is the first time I've been in here.
You know, we hear that a lot. People that live here for years and years and never come here. But then there's other people that come here every year or every show. So it takes all different types to like the conservatory environment and what we have to offer for shows. This has been here since 1892. It was built in 1892 and opened up in 1893 by Henry Phipps. Friends with Andrew Carnegie and all the very rich people at the beginning of the last century. And he left this to the city of Pittsburgh as a gift. So it was constructed not quite as elaborate as it is today, but it is the same structure basically for many of the rooms in the very beginning of the room.
I was curious, have the plants evolved over time in Phipps?
Yeah, we have collections rooms, and then we have changing display rooms, such as the palm court that you see here. So when you walk through, you'll see a combination of different things that are permanent, and then other ones that we change up to five times a year. So we have spring show, winter show, summer show, fall show, and orchid and bonsai show. So they're all very exciting shows that we put on. We're also very excited about all our collections, too. So we have a very extensive orchid collection, cacti collection, bonsai collection. So we like to talk about those, too, because they're pretty exciting.
We walked in here into the main entryway, and immediately I feel the humidity go up.
Yeah. Well, we water our plants all the time. So, living things, it's so nice to just take in the oxygen that you get in here. You just come in here on a winter day, and you're just, like, revived again. So, and your skin, it glows.
So how does the humidity work or the irrigation systems? Do people manually do it?
There's only a few things that are not manually watered. Everything is basically done by a horticulturist in the mornings. Before guests show up, we pull out our hoses and we water what we need to water. And they go through a rotation of what needs more water and what doesn't. Just like humans, they all need different needs. So do plants.
Has there been, for instance, like during storms or such, how is that?
Yeah, we've had storms. We've had bad storms sometimes too. We have a skeleton crew on the weekend, and they come in and do the same things that the people during the week do. Most of our staff is here Monday through Friday, and then we have a crew on the weekends to take care of everything in the back and here. So there's another acre in the back of plants that are coming up for the next shows. And what we store, so there's a lot to take care of.
Why don't you tell us about some of the plants we can see so that our listeners can imagine and be inspired to come to Phipps?
So when you walk in the palm court, it's 60 feet high. It's like a big dome. It's like a big snow globe right now because everything's cold outside and everything's tropical inside. So there's lots of palms in here, some of them soaring up to like 40 feet high or taller. And lots of greenery in here. So this is, the palm court's a combination of our collections, our palm collection, and as you see in the middle, a changing display with our unicorns and lights and Christmas lights and poinsettias.
How long does it take to plant a show? I know you said that there was an acre of plants behind Phipps. How do you time that correctly or order the plants in time?
Well, it's very well orchestrated, and in over 130 years of planning shows, they get kind of good at it. So we do that months ahead of time as far as the plants are concerned. The planning process for the designs can take up to several years. So it depends on the complexity of the show. Say for the fall shows that I design, it takes about a year. So I am working on this next fall's final designs right now. And there's another designer who does all the winter shows and the spring shows and the summer shows. And she does those probably a year to a year and a half ahead of time because they're a little bit more complex.
Along with the palm trees, I see a bunch of sort of ground cover kinds of things here. Are these native to this area, these things that grow in Pittsburgh? Or
everything in here is pretty much tropical, so you're not going to find these growing outside in Pittsburgh during the winter or anything like that. These are all brought from other parts of the world, like Madagascar and the Far East, Thailand, all these different places in the world that have a tropical environment.
I'm a sucker for things like this with the variegated leaf, both green and white. Here, we'll point the microphone at it so people can see.
Yeah, we love the variegated leaves. People love this because they can recognize it. So some things you will recognize as a pothos, you know, a regular house plant that people buy anywhere. And then there's other things like such as these palms that nobody could really grow at home because they're 40 feet high that you can come in and hear and appreciate.
Are any of them date palms? Any of them give fruit?
Oh, yeah, there's date palms over here. They kind of give off a mess of fruit. Yeah, the birds come in and eat them. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
How do you get birds in here?
They come in through the vents. Yeah, they'll come into vents and they'll feel the warmth coming. It'll vent out some of the hot air up there. If it gets too hot up top, it will vent out that heat so that it doesn't get too hot in here, because it can happen.
I mean, the unicorn is a beautiful display. It looks like it is made out of some type of moss and then some other things. Do you recycle plants in order to make these sculptures? Because this looks like it's created out of some different interesting dried plants.
Yeah, the unicorn you see is covered with coconut coir. So it's that husk that's on the outside of the actual nut. So there's sheets of that, and it's all put together and glued onto the horse. We call it the horse. And then we made a unicorn out of some palm fronds that were circled around a rod. So, yeah, we have a very creative team here. It's amazing.
I've noticed there's also been some electronic sculpture installations, like the previous installation about music and the piano that kind of had lighting to it and water coming from it.
So for the fall show was music, and you mentioned that, and you remember seeing the console that had the different eras of music. We try to bring in a lot of interactive things for people to play with, because it's not only adults and children that like to do it. Everybody likes to play with buttons and see how things work. But the music was really, we needed to have a place where people could just relax. So the palm court was jazz. So we put some chairs out so people could just watch the water flowing over the piano keys and have just a nice relaxing afternoon listening to music.
Wait a minute. Water overflowing the piano keys? If my grandchildren did that, they'd be in deep trouble.
Yeah, they would be. But we have an amazing team. Paul Wydeck created that from scratch, that piano. And everybody thought it was a real piano that was converted into a fountain. But no, he created that from scratch. So he took my drawings and just went with it and made a baby grand to size and then put the water feature into it. So he's an amazing person. We're very lucky to have people that are so creative on our team.
I know you were talking about having an emphasis on interactive elements within the work. Is that primarily to engage people in terms of their love of plants, or more to steer people towards education?
Some things are a little bit more educational, and then some other things are just pure entertainment, like the music box we had for the fall show. It's just listen to your favorite era of music. That was just pure entertainment. And then there's other things that we have in our gallery room, for instance, that are a little bit more educational for children. And we have our interpretive signage that's throughout that is created to give people a little bit more insight into why a plant is here, why it's a certain color, why it's a certain shape, what it's used for, all kinds of things like that.
This is a blast.
Oh my God, Laura is leading us to the electric train layout, the train layout. You guys have a model train layout every holiday season, don't you?
Yeah, every fall we come up with a new theme, an exciting theme that will go through the spring show. And then at the end of the spring show, we take it out and we put our summer show in. So the South doesn't stay like this altogether. We come up with a new theme during the summer, and then we install it in the fall again every year.
But you don't have trains here year round?
No, not in this room year round. We skip the summer And the long summer has a summer show in it, and then we bring back the railroad for the fall.
This year it appears to be a Hollywood-themed show. I'm looking right now about a Pittsburgh version of Godzilla takes on Pittsburgh, the Cathedral of Learning, with some, it looks like they're lantern flies. That's super fun and engaging and creative.
This is where the fun comes in, because you can do a lot of things with the spotted lantern fly. Last year it was a natural kind of inclination to kind of do something funny with that. And our designer came up with that, and it's just like Godzilla fighting the spotted lanternfly. And then we had our exhibits person, Lauren, make those from hand scratch. So she made that out of like pantyhose and the big one, and paper mache, and painted it by hand. So it's kind of really cool how she came up with all that.
It's amazing what you can do with electronics. The train is just going around and is stopping at the station, and there's a diner next to it, right in front of the lantern fly covered pit buildings.
Yeah, when we had, you remember the bus that fell into the hole downtown? We had that a couple shows ago. So it's really kind of fun to take a Pittsburgh moment and turn it into our train. So that's half the fun, is just coming up with these different ideas.
Let's walk down to Hollywood.
Yeah.
Looks to me like somebody's had a whole lot of fun building things.
Yeah, and you see the interactive where you just wave your hand over it and something happens, like the train goes or something else happens. And we also have interaction with Oscar. So Oscar's hiding. So if you see over here, we have a gold Oscar, and they hide it all the time in the display, and you have to find it. So it drives kids crazy because they can't find it all the time. But it's just another way of bringing a little bit of interaction with our guests. Our gallery room is one of our changing display rooms, but I think it's just amazing how beautiful all these flowers are. And you can see there's a little bit of a gnome theme. So these are the little gnome homes, and there's little fairies up here flying around with little ornaments, putting them on the tree. And back here we have our Fairchild Exchange. Kids make these ornaments up. So if you look at the ornaments on these trees, they're all handmade.
By your guests.
By kids. So all these schools, these elementary, middle, and high school kids made all these ornaments for this tree as a challenge. So it's very creative use of reusable things, things they found, and they put them together and made ornaments out of them.
Yeah, it looks like there's some exciting ornaments, like a repurposed Oreo package over here, and some other really great materials that are also incorporated, like the typical popsicle sticks and other really fun stuff. I think there's a lot of birds on this tree, at least, which is very nice.
Yeah. And you can see all the creativity that goes into it. And it's a great way of engaging classes in their schools and knowing that they can come here and see their ornament on a tree. I think it's really nice.
We're walking around Phipps in the holiday season of 2024 with Laura Schock, who's been kind enough to spend some time with Kate Smiggy and me. Shows you what a brown thumb I am. What are those gorgeous orange flowers?
Those are begonias. Yeah, aren't they beautiful? Bright color, bright and cheerful. So it kind of goes back to that orange type of poinsettia. So that's actually like a kind of a reddish orange, but it kind of harkens back to the orange over here.
I don't know anything about the varieties of poinsettias. I always thought there were poinsettias, and that's it.
No, there's all different types. There's new cultivars all the time. Yeah, it's very exciting to use new ones, new colors. There's even a yellow one this year that we have. Yeah, it's really cool.
You said they're new cultivars. How do they make them?
It's all by breeding. So there's masters in breeding, and they come up with different colors and different types and different shapes, and then they'll put them out to the public.
And does that come with that year of planning, or does it take more years of planning to come up with those colors?
Well, when we see the plants are released, then we tend to get some of them in our designs. So if you see something new and cool, I know our winter design, Jordan, likes to put in new designs
new colors, something different for people to look at all the time.
There's a lot of brilliant colors in this show alone. I mean, there's a lot of really beautiful purples and oranges and teals in this room. And it's just a joy to see that there's so many different shades and shapes and textures also amongst the plants, which makes this especially engaging. Is Botany in Action a program that is exclusive to FIPS, or is it a more of a worldwide or a national program? And what does it entail exactly? Is it more of an activism program or a research-based?
It's more of a research-based program activated by FIPS. So it was started here, and it's integrated with us. So but we have grad students from all over that come and say, I want to go study this in the rainforest or wherever. And they actually get money, and then they come back here and they tell, they have a big program on what they found, what kind of research they got out of it, and what kind of things they, we can benefit from.
I think around us we notice our globe seems to be heating up, and I think we constantly hear news about species that keep going extinct. How does FIPS, and as a botanical garden, what is its role in kind of trying to engage people in action?
Yeah, FIPS is really active. If you go on their website, you'll see a whole plethora of ways that people can learn a little bit more about not just our conservatory, which is great, but it also goes into like how you can be more active in your own home, saving energy, saving water, you know, reducing your plastics, eating better. So there's a whole world out there that you can benefit from and you can learn at FIPS. So there's a ton. We have classes. We have, just coming here, you'll see around here a lot of notes on how to use less water, reduce your use of electricity, and make yourself healthier. So it's all about making the planet better.
I grew up in St. Louis with the Jewel Box. St. Louis is a close equivalent to FIPS, and it's in Forest Park there. I get the sense that places like FIPS, the Jewel Box, the National Arboretum, they all do have a mission, like Kate was implying.
Yeah, FIPS are. It's the same thing with FIPS. We have a mission to, you know, make people healthier, have people more engaged in plants and their environment, even their home environment, their outside garden environment. So we have everything from reducing usage all the way to learning how to do bonsai, for instance, so that you're have a hobby that's calming and works with plants. So anything that's plant-based, we're really interested in.
I think it's especially interesting. There's a lot of different tags on the different plants about where it's from. And I think for me, as an art student, just kind of observing different plant shapes and stuff, then being able to learn about the different types of plants and where they come from, then looking that up as we have like our cell phones now, it's really easy to get interested in a lot of different things. And I think that FIPS provides a lot of different ways for people of all ages to engage.
Yeah, it's exciting because I do the labels here for the plants. So I love it when people say that they look at the labels and they see them. So that makes me very happy. And it's kind of fun to see people look at them and say, oh, that tree's from Madagascar. And kids go, where's Madagascar? You know, so they look it up and they learn something that day. So I think coming here, it's amazing how much you learn just to sit in a nice, quiet place and take in all the plants and the colors and just people enjoying themselves here is great.
I think that goes along with how plants kind of go hand in hand with our mental health. There was one week during last semester, I think I went every single day during my lunch period just to kind of sit, draw, and contemplate, and kind of people watch as well. And I think that FIPS provides a great place for students to do that, especially like university students.
Yeah, you guys are right across the street, so you should be telling people to come over here all the time. I love seeing students in here engaging, doing a drawing, or just looking at plants, and it's really fun to see that. It's really rewarding to us. This panel in the back was all created by our exhibits people, and I think it's amazing. So there's ferns and all types of mosses and fungi on here to make a really creative background. And there's little lights at night light up. So it's really fun.
We just walked into the Hawaii room. Oh, my heavens, I thought there was humidity elsewhere.
Yeah, this is like the true tropics. So welcome to Hawaii. Feels good with our sweatshirts on, huh? So this room will be changing come this spring, January and February. Opens up March 1st with Panama. So we had three people go to Panama and do a research study trip. They went all through the Darien Gap, which is an area of high concentration of really exotic plants and animals. They saw all kinds of stuff. They saw a harpy eagle, which is like the world's largest eagle. It's massive. The plant diversity there is such that you will not see some of these plants anywhere else in the world. So we've brought some of those plants, and we'll be changing out many of the plants in here to go from Hawaii to Panama. So we're very excited.
And will some of these plants, I'm seeing, what are these plants called?
Anthuriums? Yeah, they'll be going. They'll be leaving, yeah. So a lot of the understory colorful things will change to other plants. All the signage will change to talk about the ethnobotanical uses of plants for the Panamanian instead of Hawaii. So
I believe there's a fair amount of interaction for the kids in here.
Well, much like the mall with the water feature, the kids love the water. So they love the waterfalls. We have two of them through here and a little river. So it's a lot of fun. Over here, we'll come to this little hut, and you'll see some of the uses of plants. And this kind of is a really great way of teaching people of how they make paper and things like that.
So everything that's in this case has been made from plants.
In the case, there's some elements that are labeled in the Hawaiian language. And I think one of the interesting things of it, they're talking about the brushes that are being used, the lauhaula brushes, some of the bark scrapers that go into making this type of fabric.
It's called kapa. Kapa is used in many different ways for bedding, for clothing, for paper to write on. So it's a mulberry plant, and they pound it into a very thin fiber. They mash it down, and then they paint on it different symbols. So it's becoming a lost art. So it's really kind of fun to see people looking at this and learning a little bit about Hawaiian history. Over here, you ever heard of poi?
Poi.
So here we're talking a little bit about poi and how it's made in this trough with this stone. So kalo is the plant, and they show you here how it's made, how it's lifted up and then pounded into poi.
Because they want the roots.
Yep, exactly. They cook it down.
I think it's incredible that people are exposed to these ways of making and ways of making food and also using plants, because I think now we are so, a lot of us, maybe in Pittsburgh or maybe in the other parts of the U.S. in general, are a little more separated from how plants are incorporated into our everyday lives.
Right, and that's the whole idea behind the tropical forest, was to change it and give people another glimpse of another type of culture that uses plants in a different way. And a little bit about, you know, how they're keeping their plants going and the problems of keeping those plants going in this world. A lot of issues. A little bit of learning.
Do I see bananas over there?
Yeah, you see bananas. And those are edible, too. See, they make great banana bread. So when they do become ripe, I'll take a few home and make banana bread. Bananas are going to be taken out for Panama. So, you're looking at some of the last bananas in here. But we have our tropical fruit and spice room that has lots of bananas. So there's another room that will always have bananas.
Where do these plants go once they're removed? Are they kept in that acre there preserved, or are some of them transported to other places?
So a lot of our plants will be donating to other places, like the aviary or the zoo. Some will have to be taken out, such as some of the trees will be taken out, not all of them. And then we'll be bringing in other plants that are more of a collections plant that will stay through future tropical forests. So we're always evolving the design in here and making it better than the last one. A lot of the smaller things we'll donate to other places so that we don't, you know, we want to stay sustainable too. And some might be dug out and used for another show, like our summer show, and then other ones we'll be tossing out. We compost everything.
Laura, as we're moving on, could you remind our listeners, what is the website they should go to learn more about FIPS?
www.fipsconservatory.org. So go on there and you'll learn so much. Their website's wonderful. They have so much information on there.
I know we're approaching one of the koi ponds. Will that be staying for the Panama exhibit? Is that one of the more permanent things in this installation?
Yeah, that will stay. That's always a big feature with the kids. So, yeah, the koi pond will be staying, as will the goldfish. But we're going to be bringing in things like hissing cockroaches. So we're going to have hissing cockroaches and scorpions coming into this display for Panama. So I think that's exciting.
You're supposed to be enticing people to come. You're telling them about cockroaches and scorpions?
Yeah, but they'll all be safe in a container, and they're not going to hurt you. They're very docile, so yeah, they're very cute.
Now we're approaching kind of the topography of Kauai, the garden isle. Is there a reason why there's an emphasis on this island in particular?
Have you ever been there, Kauai? It is gorgeous. I've been here twice, and it is amazing. It is known as the garden isle. It has more greenery on this place than pretty much anywhere else in the United States. Up in here is a place where it is the wettest place on earth. So you can actually walk there and see what it's like and overlook some of this. This is called Nepali. And you can walk from here all the way over to this beach over here. It's 11 miles. It's an amazing place to go. If you love plants, it really is incredible. They have the National Tropical Botanical Garden. There's two satellite places here. And there's one in Florida, but there's two here. And it's an amazing place.
Speaking of other botanical gardens, are there certain botanical gardens that FIPS is in conversation with?
Yeah, you can gain a lot of knowledge from working with other people that work in this business. And yes, for Hawaii, we did collaborate with the National Tropical Botanical Garden heavily on what kind of things we needed to put into our exhibits. Like the breadfruit instance that you see on the television here, talking about how critical it is to have that fruit and to get it into our culture so that we can benefit from it because it grows fast, easy to grow, doesn't have a lot of pest issues. So there's, you know, collaborated with a lot of the people from the National Tropical Botanical Garden to get this going. So, there's so much here to see. It takes more than one visit to see everything, and every time you come back, there's something new to see. 5 exhibits a year, a tropical forest that changes every 4 years. The holidays alone bring in more people than any other exhibit. And, you know, it's people getting their guests out of the house and getting them to a botanical garden so they can have some fun. But they also, you get to see them walking around and interacting and seeing all the plants. It's kind of fun. Middle of winter.
With the light show coming on later tonight in the nighttime, how does that change FIPS hours?
Yeah, just like you can actually stay all day if you want. But I think the best time to come is at twilight. So you get to see a little bit during the day where you see a little bit more of the plants. And then at night, you have the outdoor gardens that open up at 5 o'clock. And it goes to either 10 or 11 o'clock at night, depending on the day. So it's a really fun thing to see, especially if you have a large crowd of people you need to entertain for the weekend. It's a great place.
So the light show is outside and it's spread around. It happens every year.
Yes, every year we have is different, and it expands every year. You'll see more stuff every year. FIPS Conservatory is known as, like, for me anyway, and I've heard a lot of people say it's the jewel of Pittsburgh. Because it's just one of those places that you just love to see. And you don't always know exactly when you're going to go see it next. So you treasure it when you come here. It's always different. Always evolving. Always something growing.
Thank you so much, Laura, for conducting this interview with us and giving us some more insight into Phipps Botanical Gardens and the Holiday Light Show. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you.
I appreciate you coming in. I hope to see more of you.
WRCT Pittsburgh. It's more fun when it doesn't make any sense.
WRCT Pittsburgh. No one is as excited about flaming cheese as we are.
WRCT Pittsburgh. It's more fun when it doesn't make any sense.
Thank you. Every year, over a million...
RCT Pittsburgh, the last bastion of pulchritude.
Yeah. mountain climbing. Jupiter Cyclops winks at me. Yeah, he knows who's driving. Hit neutral in the tail of a comet. Let the vortex